The 2024 NCAA March Madness Men's Tournament is back.
You can feel the madness.
This is the big dance.
The biggest event in college sports is kicking off Tuesday, March 19th, with the first four, and you don't want to miss a second of the action as we march all the way to the Final Four on April 6th and 8th. Catch all the clutch shots.
Long three.
It's good.
Big time plays.
Rejected.
Oh, what a pass.
Big finish.
Upsets, Cinderellas, Blue Bloods, and more.
Oh, my goodness.
Plus, this year, there are more ways to get in the game with Max.
What a move.
Dropping jaws here.
Tune in to the NCAA Men's Division I Basketball Championship, March 19th through April 8th on TBS, CBS, TNT, True TV, and stream on Max to stay up to date on the chase for a championship.
The madness is real.
Great basketball.
Oh, wow.
Great stories.
He's not human.
That's what this tournament is all about.
Who had the better Sunday, Anthony Kim or Scottie Scheffler? And I actually think there's a conversation to be had about it. AK, I mean, 65, going low. He's still got the going low gene. That's big time stuff.
Woo. Welcome back to The Loop. I'm Alex Myers. As always, I'm joined by Steve Hennessy and Christopher Powers. We have a very special guest joining us in a bit. Longtime golf writer, reporter, extraordinaire, Bob Herrig will be joining us to discuss, discuss a lot of things, but in particular, his newest book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. We will get into that in a bit with Bob, but first, a lot to talk about, both on the PGA Tour and elsewhere, but we will start on the tour at Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Guys, we finally got a big-time winner. No disrespect to like Hideki Matsuyama, obviously, or Wyndham Clark, but they were still 60 or 70 to 1 odds when they won. We finally got a heavy, heavy favorite winning an event with Scottie Scheffler. How'd you guys do with that? I assume we all were on Scottie Scheffler and we were cleaning up.
I think I said it last week that just top 10 Scottie Scheffler, and like that's the best week. So there you go. This was actually like an intriguing Sunday. It ended up being pretty lame, like on the back nine. But I think the difference between the Hideki week and the Wyndham Clark week was they just like sucked the drama out of it, which is what Scotty ended up doing. But at least we had a Sunday with all these big names. I mean, pathetic betting performance, considering that there were 70 guys in the field and I bet the second favorite and he decided not to show up. At all, just you know, another reason not to bet Rory McIlroy.
Me too.
I mean, placement market, sure. You know, he'll top 10 you to death, even though he didn't here.
I bet him to top 10. I'll let you know he did not top 10 me to death.
Correct.
Yeah.
Cam Young, just like CP, I was roped in there.
Stop.
I mean, it's awful. This is not a sport to bet on. Apparently, golf.
I'm done betting golf. CP, I don't know about you. I know you hit recently.
Hideki.
Right. So you're feeling pretty good. I mean, all you need is one hit, right? And then you're like, you feel like you're good for like a few months. I have not hit a bet
two weeks, maybe.
Right. But so you're feeling a little better, but like, I really might stop betting on golf. It's pointless. I finally bet top 10 Rory. It seems about the safest bet you could make.
At Bay Hill.
Bay Hill. And even after a bad first round, he's T5 going into Sunday or whatever. He didn't come close.
Makes the turn at four over. I mean,
absolutely insane. Pathetic. 41 on the front nine. Just awful. So even when I take a quote easy bet, I get smoked. Sorry, I'll let you talk CP in a second. I had Wyndham Clark. I told you I was going to bet him. I forgot to. He was even par through five on Thursday. He had gone from 60 to 1 to 90 to 1.
Wow.
Even par through five. The leader was, you know, Justin Lower at 5 under. I'm like, all right, we're just starting here. I had him 90 to 1 odds. And of course, this is the week that Scottie Scheffler figures it out on the green. Of course. So thanks a lot. Horrible week. I should not bet on golf anymore. All right, CP, your turn.
Nothing good. I mean, I take the cake. I bet on two guys that missed the cut in an event. It's almost impossible to miss the cut.
Only four guys missed the cut.
Fleetwood. I found two of those people. Fleetwood, who made a 10.
Yeah.
Bested by Jake Knapp on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Justin Rose, who also missed the cut. So,
And he's Mr. MasterCard. Wow. That's
Mr. MasterCard. Yeah. The only thing I have gotten right, like, the last few weeks is saying that Colin Morikawa is playing bad. I've been right about that. So, that these are the Vic laps you have to take when you bet on two guys that missed the cut. You got to point out who you faded. The section I hate the most of our expert column, but it's the only one I've been right in this year.
That's good. Well, you got something at least. Yeah, it's tough out there when you have two guys miss the cut, and I mean, almost impossible to miss the cut. People are calling Tommy Fleetwood 10 cup. I love that. That is great. That is great
stuff. He will 100% contend this week, and I'm not betting on him.
You're not betting
100%. Yeah.
Well, I thought
you guys can have him.
I thought that was going to be Cameron Young, because I told you last week that's it for me, and I stuck to my guns at least for 1 week. Not going to bet him, especially as he's, you know, always among kind of the favorites here in almost any event that he plays, even though he's never won. So it's kind of wild. Let's talk about Scottie Scheffler, because obviously we've been talking about the historic ball striking for over a year. Just can never win. I think he had a 12 top five since his last win, which had been almost a full 12 months ago. He gets the new putter, which happened to be a mallet, which Rory had happened to suggest a few weeks ago. He claims it had nothing to do with Rory's comments. If it did have something to do with Rory's comments, then even more reason to be down on Rory today, because he cost us even more money by turning Scheffler's career around. But guys, he was fifth in strokes gained putting for the week. First on Sunday, as he pulled away from the field, 16 of 16 on putts inside 10 feet. I know that's not the greatest stat, but as someone who had Wyndham Clark, I kept waiting for him to miss one putt. He literally did not miss one putt all day. How, you know, is this guy now going to rip off, I mean, a monster season?
Nobody's ever won the Players back to back, right? And be
right.
That's
right.
How we'll know.
Place to start.
He pulls that off.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like just going all, I just said I'm never going to bet again in golf, but I feel like going all in on Scottie Scheffler at the
Players. Yeah, that'll save you.
That's really going to end well for you.
All right. Or at the Masters. One of those two. He's got to win one of these next two. He's too good. I don't know.
The good news is that we have a betting expert joining us at for a secondary podcast dropping Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll talk quickly about Keith Stewart. We announced a new partnership with him last week. Keith is a 20-plus year PGA pro who has a brand, Read the Line, that's kind of really gaining momentum in the golf space. Bunch of followers on TikTok. It's where all the people are, according to CP. Myers and I have never ventured into waters. But Keith's big on the talk, and he is going to be producing all this content for us gambling-wise. Check the pod feed on Wednesday for a specific Players pod that doesn't include endorsing betting all your money on Scottie Scheffler at $5.
Okay. Listen to Keith and not me. That's for sure. But yeah, like Steve said, we'll have a separate episode on that coming up, because it is the Players, big time event. CP will be our boots on the ground, correct?
Should be one of many
trooping down there to Ponte Vedra Beach. Okay, guys, seriously, how many wins is Scottie Scheffler going to end up with this year? If I set the over-under at, I mean, I got to be fair because they've already played a few events, but let's say
2.5.
I was going to say 3.5, which counting, I know is high.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, but, well, that means he just has to win three more.
Yeah.
He already has one.
If the line's 2.5 more wins, I think that's fair. I'm going over. Because you think about the FedEx Cup too; those are like such short fields.
Exactly.
Like he's gonna win one of those, and you figure he's gonna be the favorite in every major. So if you win one of the four majors, and then another random win, I'll go with four. He ends the year with four.
And a major?
Yeah, I feel like the Masters is probably his this year. I have a futures parlay, you know, one of our lottery tickets, and Scheffler was my pick for the Masters. That's
nice.
Not going out on a limb, but you know, to win.
PGA Tour simp taking Scotty at the Masters.
That's right. Yeah, you think a LIV player could win the Masters?
I do.
No chance.
I'm a big LIV guy, as everyone knows.
You go back and forth from being LIV's most hated to LIV's most celebrated. we are going to talk about LIV later for sure. We are going to get to LIV. CP, what do you think? You sound a little doubtful on that 2.5 more wins over under. You take the under?
No, from here, from this point, I would probably take the over as well. From this point over two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I
want to say when we picked the majors, I picked him for one of them. Maybe the.
I picked him
Open, I think. I took him to win two, I'm pretty sure. So.
Okay.
So definitely over. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely over then. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. To me, the most amazing part was the reactions of all the other players. Lowry basically was just like
stuttering. That was amazing.
Right. He couldn't believe it. Zalatoris, same thing. He's like, look, the guy's been a world beater since he was a kid. He's the best. Wyndham Clark was like, look, he's the best player in the world. That's what they do. They shoot.
Amazing. The little 90 yard wedge shots that you think this should be an easy one for a player of this caliber. And he makes it look easy. Rory McIlroy makes it look like the hardest golf shot in the world. It's wild how easy Scotty makes it look. It's not that easy. I sympathize with Rory, but for players of that caliber, 90 yards out, inside 100, like you want to have a really good look on the next one. And Rory just cannot consistently produce those really good looks with the short clubs in his hand.
Yeah.
I'd rather have CP with a wedge in his hand from 90 yards than
go check my last TikTok. Really nice wedge from 70.
Really?
Yeah. Missed the putt, of course, but good wedge.
Well, you're in good company with Rory because he would do the same thing.
Yeah. That's true.
Oh, man. I just can't believe he didn't even sniff a top 10. I was counting the money on that one. That was brutal. Steve, what'd you think about the course itself? And, you know, I mean, he still ended up getting to 15 under, but it was a little bit of a tougher test than what we've seen recently. I know we were all kind of kind of upset about PGA National playing so easy. Bay Hill was a little tougher. I like to see it. I know people go nuts when the rough is too thick or whatever, but I don't know. To me, I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's great to see players tested in a different way than the week to week, just, you know, birdie fest and wedge fest, you know, to see guys have to launch their middle irons high. And, you know, the firmness of those greens were so impressive. I mean, Florida has gotten so much wet weather the last couple months, and those greens were so perfect. I mean, you saw a couple holes where, you know, there was no chance to get the ball on the green on some par threes, like those from pin on three or two, the par three. Guys were just, you know, automatic to the back of the green and the rough, unless you hit a perfect high iron shot. So I thought it was great. You know, it's unfortunate we don't get that type of a test on a week in and week out basis. But, you know, say what you want about Bay Hill, it's kind of like Torrey Pines. It's boring golf in a way, but it produces a great golf tournament. I kind of put it in that same.
It's exciting golf then.
It's exciting. It's exciting for a tournament. Like, I have no desire to go play Bay Hill because I can't hit a 220 yard iron shot that, you know, stops on a dime. But it's great for tournament golf, like Torrey.
It should. This is not a rollback take. This is just a general take. It should matter to hit the fairway. I think that makes for a compelling. You know, when a guy hits one offline, you're like, oh man, he's going to struggle to make par. And that's what Bay Hill and Torrey kind of provides, where every other week it's blasted into the rough and these guys, you can just flip it up in the air with the wedge and still make birdies. So you should be penalized when you miss the fairway. I know that's a crazy take. And when Brandel Chamblee says it, he gets roasted for it. But
yep. He's right. You're right.
You have to hit the fairway to have success on the PGA Tour. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
And who hits the fairway? Scottie Scheffler. And he hits it long. And it's crazy. I'm watching yesterday and I'm all
excited. Why he separated himself. That's what we want the best player in the world to separate himself. That's why he won this weekend.
He hit the drives. He hit his driver so well. And he was, of course, first in strokes gained off the tee again, like he is every week. He hit it so well that he could have hit his irons horribly and he would still be putting for birdie on every hole. And that's the difference. And the first hole, there was one group. Who was it? There were two guys in the same group go out of bounds, Homa and someone else. Scheffler went over the out of bounds with a cut and smoked it like 330 down the middle. I was like, this dude is on a different level. I mean, he just flirting with the out of bounds when he didn't have to and just not even thinking about it. Amazing stuff. I mean, Windy played well, but he hit a few bad drives that put him in bad spots. Obviously, all the other people did that as well. But Scheffler was just every time you look, even when like he falls over, the ball somehow going right down the middle. Or if he's like a little off, it's like in the first cut. I mean, just he's amazing right now. He was only 12th in strokes gained approach. Didn't matter because the driving was just that good. All right. Well, speaking of guys who used to hit it incredibly and both with the driver and the iron, anytime we compare Scheffler's historic ball striking, we're obviously talking about comparing him to Tiger Woods. And we now have the latest book on Tiger Woods, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods by Bob Herrig. Again, longtime great golf writer, golf reporter, probably has seen more of Tiger in person than anyone. I mean, maybe Doug Ferguson makes a claim there, but I mean, Bob right there, he says in the book, he was there for all 15 of Tiger's majors, which is pretty amazing. So anyway, please have a listen to our chat with Bob Herrig. We are very excited to welcome longtime golf writer and now the author of Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, Bob Herrig. Bob, thank you so much for joining. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it. I know this is your second big book. What's your schedule like these days? I know obviously you're at the Players this week, but how many, you know, what's the schedule like when a book comes out? How crazy is it?
Yeah, it's getting there now. The book comes out in a couple of weeks, right in 2 weeks before the Masters. And you know, the launch date is a big time for publishers to publicize the book. They want to sort of seize on the momentum of when a book comes out. You know, right now you can pre-order it, but you won't be able to get it until the day that it comes out. And so that's when people typically like to get, you know, nowadays they don't want to wait. They want to buy the book and have it be there the next day or go find it at the bookstore. So yeah, so it's exciting, you know, obviously with Tiger, we were assuming playing the Masters. It's the 5th year anniversary of his epic 15th major. You know, there's a lot to talk about and there's a lot in the book about that win, obviously. It was sort of the impetus for the book and then it expanded from there.
I was going to ask you that. Where did the idea start for Tiger? And again, it must be so tough because here's a guy who we've thought his career is over a few times, but he keeps kind of coming back. And who knows? He still could author something else. So is there ever a worry that, you know, about the timing of when to do a book like this?
Sure. I mean, it's you know, look, the Tiger and Phil book I did needs a couple more chapters given all that's gone on in their world since. I mean, you know, Liv is barely mentioned in that book. And obviously they went different paths on that story. And frankly, you know, it's probably another interesting part to their rivalry. So, you know, here I am sort of summing up Tiger's career. Do I think he can win again? I wouldn't say never ever, but it's probably not likely. But I do think we're probably due for another moment. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing that he's not at the Players Championship. I mean, I thought that made total sense for him to play the tournament a month before the Masters, get some reps in. But you know, there's just still remains a lot of mystery to Tiger. I think that's another part of the book as well. Just, you know, going back to these these times in his career where, you know, it was sort of like getting to the backstory of what really, how it happened. I mean, that's all ultimately how this started. I just thought it was fascinating that we thought he was done when he had that spinal fusion surgery. So I wanted to find out, well, what was that all about? Like, what happened? How did that go about? So I kind of got into that. And then, you know, really the next year he's contending. He wins a tournament 18 months after that surgery. Then he wins the Masters. He's had a career of comebacks and resiliency and, frankly, drive, the title.
Right.
It's more than just the skill. He didn't just show up and win because he was so great. He was great, but there was a lot more to it. The cut streak, you know, just how many times in golf does a guy – it's just human nature to mail it in once in a while. Things aren't going well on Friday, and you know, you're thinking to yourself, you know what? I don't have it this weekend. I'm going to go home and work on my game and see my family. You know, Tiger made 142 straight cuts. He didn't miss a cut for 7 years. Hmm. You know, so that's in there. There's a lot of that in the book.
What are the expectations, Bob, at this point, now that he's missing the Players? You know, the Masters, we assume he'll be there. You know, does that one event per month schedule that he sort of said he would commit to, do you think that's sort of out of the question now the rest of the year? Obviously he hasn't stayed with that, but yeah. What do you think the rest of 24 looks like for him at this point?
I mean, it's fair. I mean, I think now we have to wonder. I mean, I took that as a great sign of confidence that he would even go down that road.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger never tells us his schedule.
Right.
Right.
And so in December, he's asked, how do you feel? He's like, well, you know, my ankle feels good enough. I think I might be able to play once a month, kind of maybe starting with Genesis.
Right.
Everybody's like, what? I mean, so like you actually open up the door to playing in Florida. Obviously, we thought you'd try to play the Masters. You know, right. He didn't play the Players last year either. And then, you know, it makes sense. And 2 years ago, when he was in way worse condition, he played the PGA 5 weeks after the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we think that he's feeling better, well, why wouldn't you do that too?
Right.
And then, of course, the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, where he had two close calls. You know, the Open at Troon. It's been a long time since he played there. But still, Lynx golf, frankly, to me, Augusta and a Lynx course are his best opportunities at this point in his career. Of course, you'd think he'd play there. All of it made sense. So now he just threw that out the window. I mean, I don't get it at all. He played at the Seminole Pro Member a week ago. Brad Faxon was on SiriusXM talking about, hey, he looked great, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, did something occur that day that made him think his game wasn't ready?
Right.
Did something happen in the days after that? Or was he not planning all along? It's quite possible all along he just decided he wasn't going to play at the Players. And we just don't know it. That's why, you know, by him not saying anything, it leads to all the conjecture. And frankly, we don't know. Right. We just don't know. I mean, I'm guessing here. I'm using, you know, institutional knowledge to try to come up with an answer. But the bottom line is, you know, maybe he tweaked something, or maybe he never had any intention to play anyway.
Yeah.
And it could be anywhere in between.
I'm not going to pretend I know what it's like to write a book, but I would imagine it's a very hard, mentally taxing, even physically taxing process. But you've followed Tiger for your entire career. You know him well. Does that make it any easier to write a book when you know the subject as well as you do?
Well, I'd say it makes it a lot easier than if I didn't. If I was starting from scratch and given the timeline, it was important for me for the book to come out at the 5-year mark. If you had an open-ended time when it was going to come out, and then say you want to take 3 or 4 years on it, then I think it becomes easier. The fact that there was sort of an ending time when the manuscript had to be done made it a challenge. And even though there is a lot of institutional knowledge, I've covered him the whole way. I've been at all of his major wins. And look, I had a lot of the information that I've written over the years, which I could draw from. That made it a lot easier too. When I'm writing about the 2008 US Open that he won, when, you know, he should have never played probably, and he ends up winning, and he's got these two fractures in his leg that we find. You know, I was there and I remember that. And I was able to go back to a lot of the key figures, or I was able to look back at what I had written for detail. you know, that sped up the process, that clearly made it easier. But I would say most book authors will tell you that in the throes of it, you're sitting there cursing yourself. Why did I do this? Why did I do this to myself? What am I doing? What did I do? I'm never doing this again, you know? Yeah. And then when it's over, you know, you've kind of, no, that was great. Oh, wow. That was fun. You know? So,
right. We, you know, we've seen through the years and heard about how, you know, tough Tiger can be to deal with. I know, obviously, you have, at least from what I've seen, a pretty good relationship with him. But what was his, you know, did he give you any sort of access or help in this endeavor? And did you go to him and ask him for, what did you tell him about the project that you were working on, I guess?
Yeah, it's a fair and it's a really good question. And the answers to all of that are no.
No.
You know, this sort of began in the fall of 2022, August, September 2022 is when we decided we're going to do this. And I had to have it done by June of last year, basically. And really my deadline was right around, I was just getting ready to be done. And then June 6th happened. The framework agreement.
Right.
Well, this got, you know, all right, now all of a sudden I'm not being able to finish this up right away, but most of it was done. So my access to him was going to be very small. And, you know, I approached his people before the Tiger Phil book. Mm-hmm. And at the time they told me, first of all, they don't like the idea that you're doing a book. Just don't. And I mean, like they never tried to talk me out of it or that they were not, you know, rude or mean or anything, but, you know, you can just tell they don't like it. You know, and I just tried to sell them on the idea of, look, you know, if anybody's going to do a book on Tiger, I'd like to think I might be one of the people that you feel good about doing it.
Right.
You're going to get a fair shake from me. I've covered him my whole career. He's gotten a fair shake over the years. I've been, you know, written hundreds of laudatory stories about Tiger over the years. So like, it's kind of hard to think that I'm going to like burn them or rip them. And neither book has been about that. It's more about celebrating him, celebrating him and Phil, you know? And so this book, I had no opportunity to talk to him, frankly. I mean, after trying to think, in the fall of 2022, remember he didn't play at the Hero. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to, and he didn't. Mm. So he was really only there for the press conference. I never saw him.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, at the father son that year, you know, I had bits and pieces of conversations with them. And then the next time we see him is at the Masters, or I'm sorry, at Torrey Pond or at Riviera, where he's hosting. I mean, there was never going to be a time to be able to like get any sort of substantive info out of him. This was about talking to other people about him mostly. And going back to his comments or interviews I had conducted over the years with him.
Is there anything in the book about 2019 winning the Masters that you think readers will be, you know, really surprised or, you know, a fact that they didn't know that we haven't learned yet that you've uncovered in your reporting, in your writing that is really going to impress us?
Well, you know, impress is a high standard. I don't know about that, but what I would say is for people who follow Tiger all along, I think there will be a lot of reminders about things they forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for people who never did or who are new to Tiger or who maybe, you know, let's say, you know, are maybe 30 now or 35 and missed it.
Right.
I think they'll be intrigued to see all the different things that he accomplished. But if there's something that I find that's new, I devoted like a whole chapter kind of to the process of him having that back surgery. The chapter's called The Doctor. And I talked to the doctor. Now, he wasn't able to talk about personal things that he did. Like, he didn't say, well, yeah, Tiger was really hard to like go into this part of his back. He couldn't do that due to privacy things. But he was able to speak to me just generally about how amazed he is that Tiger came back from this. I talked to his practice partner about the doctor who'd done thousands of spinal fusions over the years. I mean, it's like, I don't want to say it's like cataract surgery, but he's done a lot of them.
Right.
And so he's an expert, and they picked him for a reason. I do the backstory of that. The day in 2017, there's a lot to that Masters Champions dinner day on that Tuesday of that week. You know, up until the week before, you know, remember Tiger had not played since Dubai that year. He tried to come back. He played Torrey Pines. He missed the cut. He went all the way to Dubai, withdrew after one round. All along, his people talked like he might come back at Riviera. He might come back at Bay Hill. The Players was after the Masters then.
Right.
You know, he might come back at the Masters. Like, he never was just – he was never ruling himself out for the year. He frankly, he didn't – you know, there was this hope, and I think he thought he would try, but obviously he didn't make it. And we went to the Champions dinner. He was in distress. He was in a lot of pain. He talked later about needing like nerve killing, nerve numbing, you know, drugs to make it through that night. Mm-hmm. He was really hobbling, and they had made plans to go to London overnight to meet with consultants the next day in London. And they had some testing done there that isn't done in the U.S. And this is all in there. They, you know, they ran these X-rays. They saw how bad it was. His trainer at the time told me afterward, you know, in the reporting for the book, he said, Tiger used to tell me that it felt like bone on bone in his lower back. And that never made sense to me because there's a disc there. It shouldn't have felt that way. Like that's what the disc does. It keeps the bone from rubbing. But he said, when I finally saw those photos or those images, it shocked me how bad it was. There was virtually nothing there. He said, I don't know how he played the limited golf he played. This is Dan Helman, his trainer at the time, who'd only started working with him maybe 9 months before. He said, I don't know how he played the amount that he played, knowing what I knew then. It had to be immensely painful. And so at that point, my thing was, I just want to get him back to a normal life. There wasn't much talk about golf.
Right.
And so, anyway, Tiger has, it's crazy. He went to a function at, in Branson where he was opening or doing a design on a golf course.
Right.
He showed up at like a, you know, a promotional thing, and he got asked questions. Well, yeah, I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure when I'm going to play again. And the very next day he had the surgery. Like we hear about it like the day after that he had spinal fusion surgery. And of course, you know, when you start doing the research into that, you know, he's not going to be able to do anything for months.
Right.
There's a ton of rehab. There's a lot of pain involved. But I talked to, I talked to his partner. I talked to Dudley Hart, who had, he had a spinal fusion. Greg Owen had a spinal fusion surgery done by the same doctor, Richard Geyer. And he did it knowing that Tiger had gone through it. And Greg Owen, of course, is not an accomplished player like Tiger, but he was a very good pro. He should have won Bay Hill one year. You know, he played on the European tour. And he talked to, you know, he was very good describing what the pain was like.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I got it. Was it exactly like Tiger? Probably not, but it was similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all those things, I think, are somewhat new to people who haven't followed along. And I think it's just, it puts into perspective what he had to do to come back. And of course, you know, he comes back in 2018, he surprises us all. He actually played very nicely. His fourth tournament back at the Valspar, he finished the second by a shot to Paul Casey.
Yeah.
I mean, if he would have putted at all, he'd have won.
Right.
His fourth tournament back after going through all that.
Yeah.
You know, so in 2018 was an amazing ride for Tiger. You know, he contended at two majors and won the tour championship, and all of that is documented in pretty great detail, I'd say.
You mentioned you've been to all 15 majors. Obviously, we all remember the really big ones, 2019, 2008 US Open, 05 Masters, all that. But was there one going back in your research and remembering all the ones you were at, like, you know, not, I don't want to say forgotten because Tiger fans kind of remember all of them, but one of the majors that was like, wow, that he probably didn't get enough credit for how good of a performance that was, that maybe we had forgotten about.
Well, at the back of the book, I actually went through the task of trying to rank them 1 to 15. Like, how do you do that really? Yeah. Right. I mean, like, as I wrote, it's like none of them, they all count the same. Yep. And any major is a huge feat. And so you can't like diminish one at all. But yet when you're going to rank them, something has to be 15th.
Right.
And so obviously they're all big in their own right. But I mean, if there is one that's forgotten, when you think about it, I put the 19 Masters number one, just because I said, I admitted recency bias matters.
Yep.
Obviously he hadn't had one for 11 years. But given the fact that nobody thought that he'd come back, it was a different Tiger. Nobody feared him. He was 43. It wasn't like when he was in his 30s and dominating, people feared him. It was different. And he had, you know, Francisco Molinari had beat him at the Open the year before. He wasn't worried about Tiger. Mm-hmm. He's in the last group with Tiger playing some great golf. Kepka, DJ, you know, they were there. Schauffele was there. You know, any one of those guys could have won the tournament, and that Tiger was able to overcome that had some similarities to Jack Nicklaus in 1986 when he beat, you know, Norman and Tom Kite and Tom Watson and Seve. I mean, you know, Jack was way older than those guys who were in their prime. And so that's why I put it number one. But the one that I think is often forgotten, and it's crazy to think about, is when he won the Masters in 2001.
Mm.
It was his fourth straight major.
Yep.
I mean, he and if there's a win of all wins that was forgotten, it was the fact that he won the Players' Championship 2 weeks before. So not only did Tiger win four straight majors, but he also won the Players.
Yes.
In there. So if you go by the fifth major mantra, he won five.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it's crazy.
And that final round,
I mean, you know,
he was with Phil and Duval was serving.
Oh, like, yeah. Hell of a
Phil, yeah. Phil, you know, I talked about this a good bit in the Tiger Phil book. Tiger, yeah. Phil could have easily derailed the Tiger slam.
Yeah.
He was there. He played with Tiger in the last group. He had a great chance to do it.
Yep.
And just wasn't able to overcome him and ended up finishing third. It was Duval who finished second. But you know, in that streak, you remember – Pebble Beach, he won by 15. He won the Open at St. Andrews to complete the career Grand Slam by 8.
Yep.
He wins this epic playoff over Bob May at Valhalla to win 3 in a row, the first time that anybody did that since Ben Hogan. Mm-hmm. As huge as the Tiger Slam was, I think people forget the details of the Masters to complete it, because those other majors were like probably more memorable overall. So like that's one to me that's forgotten a lot. I think his two major wins at Medina, the PGA, well, not so much the one in 99, but the one in 2006, that one is not remembered as much. He won by 5. I think he beat Luke Donald and Sean McKeel. Donald played with him in the last group.
Donald showed up with a red shirt on.
Exactly. And it wasn't – there wasn't that much drama the last day.
No.
You know, obviously the 99 one was big because it was his second major and he beat Sergio, who was only 19.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard to like discount any of them. You know, they're all huge in their own right. But that 2001 Masters, when he's completing the Tiger Slam, you go, do we even talk about it? It's crazy. Right. We talk about the first Masters when we talk about the 15th, we talk about Torrey Pines. We talk about obviously, some of these other ones, but we don't always talk about that one. And it's amazing to think that you would actually not rank it among the top ones.
Right. Well, he's got, like you said, he's got so many. Yeah. You know, Bob, again, amazing stuff, because like you said, obviously you're not getting any help from Tiger's camp and you were able to research all this stuff about the surgery and you talked to other guys. You mentioned the name before. I was going to ask you, because to me, as someone who's followed Tiger a lot and watched a lot, Dan Helman, that name to me, like, I was like, who? So tell us about him. And he's played a really crucial role in Tiger's, what ended up being Tiger's comeback.
Yeah. Look, I owe a lot to Dan. He helped me here. Dan was leery because look, he had just like everybody who deals with Tiger, he had an NDA. And he didn't want to tell me anything that was going to get him in trouble or upset anyone. And he just made it clear to me the whole time. He said, look, I'm only doing this because I want people to know how incredible this was. Right. It's nothing but doing this out of respect for him. And he said, you know, I can't get into a lot of the personal stuff for reasons that, you know, I just can't disclose. But I think it's important that people understand just how dire the situation was. And Dan was a physical therapist in South Florida who, you know, had some golf accomplishments. I believe Golf Digest at one time had ranked him among, you know, like a group of physical trainers who was good for golfers. And, and I don't know how Tiger and his people found him. I think they found him through Chris Como.
Okay.
And you know, Tiger had been working with Como there for a little while. And I think that's where the relationship came from. And, you know, he's a little bit more than, you know, a guy who works on your back. Right. You know, he clearly had knowledge in this area with the spine and probably ways to train. Like he didn't divulge anything like that, but he was there for it all. And I think it was, it would have been in 2016, you know, Tiger didn't play all year in 2016 and he came back at the Hero that year. And I think that was the first tournament I saw Dan with him at there. And, you know, I saw him and I kind of figured out who it was. I introduced myself and I saw him at Torrey the following spring. I saw him in Dubai. And like, I didn't even know his name, you know, I just knew who he was. And I remember Steinberg after Tiger withdrew, talked about his trainer. And I asked Steinberg for his name and he wouldn't give it. It was like, he like walked away. It was like crazy. Like, really? We can't have the name of the trainer. Like, I mean, you know, this is like reporting 101. Well, right. You know, you mentioned the name of, well, what's his name?
Yeah. Right.
You know? And so like, you know, okay, whatever. Sorry. You know, like I didn't realize I asked something so egregious. Right. But anyway, and so, you know, then when Tiger came back, there was Dan again.
Right.
And, you know, he would be walking with him all of his rounds. And since I walked a lot of his rounds, I'd talk to him and say hello. And, you know, over time I got to know who he was. Yeah. And, you know, he was good at just sort of like, yeah, it doesn't feel great today. Or, no, I think he's a lot better today. Like, he could just give you some insight that wasn't going to necessarily result in you like writing some big story, but it gave you some help in framing like how Tiger was that day.
Sure.
Everything with Tiger has been subtle. You know, you just weren't going to get, you know, you think about it when you talk to his caddies or they weren't going to always give you everything. Right. And it was the same with Dan. So he's the one that explained the whole process of getting the Dr. Guyer. Like Dan was like, I won't have any trouble finding a doctor who wants to do surgery. Who wouldn't want to do surgery on Tiger Woods if you're a doctor?
Right.
Because that's the problem. Everybody would want to. You got to find the right one. And that's why they went to these consultants in London, one of whom could have done it. He recommended another person in London. They were ready to do it. Hey, we'll do it tomorrow or 2 days from now.
Wow.
And they said, no, we want to do it in the States. And so that's when they recommended the Texas Back Institute outside of Dallas, which is Dr. Guyer. And, you know, Dr. Guyer is probably one of Tiger's biggest fans, you know, and he, like, I've kept in touch with him at times and he has said, like, look, you know, I don't know what's going on, but, you know, nothing that would ever surprise me with Tiger. Right. And so that's sort of the basis for trying to get to the bottom of that. These guys were huge advocates of his, trying their best to help him.
Last one for me, Bob. We saw Scotty Scheffler win last week, and a lot of people are using the comparison to Tiger for this run that he's on, you know, 23 top tens in his last 29 events. Do you think that's a fair comparison? You know, obviously the amount of winning is not what Tiger did, but does Scheffler have that potential in your opinion, based on all your observations from Tiger's career?
Yeah, it's probably tough to make the comparison. I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, certainly the consistency is exactly what you're talking about. And it's remarkable. And frankly, if he'd have won a couple more times last year and turned two wins into five, and maybe one of those is the majors and the Players, then those comparisons to me have a little bit more meaning, even though it's still not probably fair because Tiger did this over stretches of time. Like, I think back to Jordan Spieth on the run that he was on, and it was really like a 3-year run. And since then, he's won only twice.
Right.
And do we expect him to get back to that? I think we expect him to win more. you know, but it's just really, really hard what Tiger did over such a long period. Now, look, what Scheffler's doing, his scoring average last year, I believe it was the seventh best adjusted scoring average in PGA Tour history and the best of anybody not named Tiger Woods.
Right.
I mean, Tiger had one through six.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. It's probably the reason he was player of the year.
Yeah.
Because I think the players, you know, appreciate how hard it is to have a scoring average that good, to be that consistent. I mean, I think he had from January 1 through the Scottish Open, 16 tournaments, not outside the top 12.
Mm.
And that streak finally ended at Hoylake, where he, I think he was like 23rd or something. He had a tough week.
Right.
But I mean, the number of times he had a chance to win, and you're sitting there anecdotally, I was writing about this at Bay Hill. I mean, anecdotally, the number of times you'd see him miss a 5-footer or a 4-footer, it was sort of cringeworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously that's the difference with Tiger. Tiger didn't miss those big putts.
Nope.
You know, and so, but I mean, that's no knock on Scotty. I mean, it's a great run that he's on. And maybe the Players' Championship, or excuse me, the Arnold Palmer win, you know, pushes him over the hump. I think it gets him past some demons that he's been dealing with on the greens.
Yeah. Point.
Last one for me too, Bob. So it looks like maybe the next time you see Tiger will be at the Masters. The book will be out. What kind of greeting do you expect to get from him? The same, different, or what do you hope to get from him?
You know, it's funny. He never once said a word to me about the Phil book.
Okay. Interesting.
And Tiger's kind of probably passive aggressive on this stuff.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't even want to acknowledge that he knows it's there. You know, and I would love if I had the opportunity, but it's just not that easy just to have 5 minutes with him and explain it.
Of course.
Like, here's why I did it, Tiger. Like, this opportunity came along. I feel like, you know, there's others certainly, but, you know, I feel like I'm in the realm of people that know your career as well as anybody. I've been here for a lot of it. I do my homework.
Yeah.
You're going to get a fair shake from me. This is 95% favorable. And, you know, frankly, I consider it an honor.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, like, and of course, you know, these guys, they all, you're making money off of Tiger.
Right.
I mean, it's laughable when you consider like he would laugh. These guys would laugh to hear like what book authors get paid. Right. It's not about that. I mean, if it was, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, like a T45 at Bay Hill.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, come on, there's a lot more to it than that. But yes, it is my living, and this is what I do. I write, you know, obviously we cover Tiger. We get paid to write what we're doing.
Right.
But to make it about making money off of you, well, you know, if it weren't for the media, all those great endorsement contracts wouldn't mean much either.
Right.
Every time we write about these guys, you know, we run their picture, we show their logos, you know,
right.
I mean, it gives them exposure. So that argument to me is hollow. It's more about, hey, look, I was asked to do this. I consider it an honor. And you should be probably of the mindset that you knew you're going to get a fair shake from me.
Right.
Look, the aspects of his career that were negative, look, there was comebacks from all of them. Let's be honest. The scandal, this is a part of the book. He finished fourth at the Masters that year.
Yeah.
Remarkable. He hadn't played in 5 months. He was mad at himself for not winning.
Yep.
How could he expect to contend after all that?
Yeah.
So, of course, that's broached, but not in gory detail.
Right.
You know, and you know, when he came back after the back surgery, he had the DUI. It was very embarrassing. His public record. It's out there. You know, I addressed it. It's in there. Did I go into great detail? No.
Right.
It's that's one more thing he had to overcome, not just the back surgery, but this, you know, this sort of this public trauma and possibly, you know, some sort of, you know, medicine issues that he had. And obviously coming back from the crash you know, the crash was reported in detail. There's a lot of unanswered questions about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll probably never get the answers unless he does a memoir and explains it.
Right.
But I'm not able to get to the bottom of those things. But yet you have to note that he's made the cut in the Masters twice since he came back from that, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. No, you're very fair, Bob. And that's that great scene that you talk about where you introduce him at the GWAA dinner and he gave that big speech and everything. Truly a lot of great stuff in there for everybody. So We appreciate you taking the time to join us, Bob. I know it's a busy week for you, obviously, at the Players. Chris will be down there. You'll cross paths with him.
Excellent.
Enjoy the Chili's. I wish I could be there. But yeah, have a great week, and we will see you at the Masters. And good luck with the book coming out in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much for joining.
I appreciate it, guys. Hey, thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you, Chris.
Okay. Thanks again to Bob Herrick for joining us. Again, check out the book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Very good. A lot of good stuff in there. A lot of stuff that even hardcore Tiger fans don't know about the legend of Tiger Woods. All right, guys, let's switch gears. We got to talk about LIV because, again, we're fair. We always talk about LIV, especially when they have some great storylines. And we're going to get to a couple things here. But first, let's start with the winner because he is one of our favorite pod guests. We've had him on a few times. Abraham Answer, and we just had him on recently, and he was very open about, you know, having not won yet on LIV and how disappointing it was and how much stress he's putting on himself to win. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, their fourth event of the year, he gets win number one. He almost blew it, had a 5-shot lead, almost blew it, but then came up clutch in the playoff with a brilliant long iron, which is what we're used to seeing Abe doing. So guys, what'd you make of Abe Answer? You know, finally cracking the circle. When everybody talks about LIV, they're like, okay, yeah, they have Ron, they have Brooks, and they have Cam Smith, and maybe Bryson. No one ever mentions this guy. And again, I get it. He had it. Well, Neiman, obviously, they're talking about now too, but nobody ever mentioned this guy. I get it. He hadn't won, but when he went there, that was a night. I mean, he was top 20 in the world, I think. I mean, he was one of the best players in the world. So guys, your thoughts on our boy Abe Answer coming through?
Happy for him. I mean, cannot like Abraham Answer.
No.
To our chat him if you get to ever talk to him in person. He's just genuinely chill dude. Hasn't been one of these complainers, whiners about he made the decision he made. He's at peace with it. He's obviously happy with it. Now he's winning again. That's awesome. Unbelievable. I just pulled up his Wikipedia. He's a win on like every freaking tour you can.
Yeah.
And one win on all of them. One on the PGA Tour, one on the DP World Tour, one on the Asian Tour, one on PGA Tour of Australia, wow. One on Korn Ferry, one on LIV. So
wow,
nice little clean-looking media box here for our boy. But yeah, I'm a huge Fireballs guy. Is that what they are?
Yes.
Mm. Or are they Torque?
No, Fireballs. He's Fireballs.
Fireballs. He's love my easy. Fireballs. Love my Abraham Answer. Love my tequila, my shit. What's the name of it?
Pacha Azul. Yeah.
I love Abraham Answer. So did not watch a second of it, but love the guy.
Yeah, pumped for him for sure. I mean, I actually believed him too, and when he said over the off season, like it pissed him off that he didn't win last year, and he committed a lot of time to getting better. It didn't seem like that bullshit, you know, the grow the game. All the LIV right. guys say like. That really got him mad. You know, he thinks he's a top 10 player on LIV, and he didn't play like it last year. But so this was great. I mean, impressive right now to beat Joaquin Neiman at anything. I mean, this guy's – he might be a top 5 player in the world. He's definitely top 10. And, you know, Answer went toe-to-toe with him in a playoff. I know it shouldn't have gotten a playoff with a 5-stroke lead, but, you know, some impressive stones – to do it. I wish I could watch it. You know, Anthony Kim shooting a 65, Neiman well, making it. Holes in one in the final round, like this is kind of epic.
I do have to, he did not beat Neiman in the playoff, but Neiman shot 7 under to 63. Almost make it to the playoff. He was one shot out.
One
but
stroke win. Okay.
He beat Cam Smith and Paul Casey in a playoff. I mean, that's
a heck of a playoff. Casey. Okay.
Heck of a playoff there. Yeah, okay. Casey, because the Crushers. Oh my God. I mean, the four aces, the dynasty might be done. The Crushers are like the new dynasty here. They want
windows closed quickly as we
windows
know.
Windows closed. Yeah. I mean, you got to strike while the iron's hot because you never know when it's not going to be your time anymore. I mean, you got the Crushers have who they have. They have Casey and Bryson.
Anabon.
Yeah. I mean, they've been dominating. So, Charles Howell, Chucky Three Stick.
Yep.
He just quietly goes along, shoots,
ATM
you know,
machine, man.
69, 68, you know, nothing too flashy. Torque came up runner up with Neiman And but yeah, the Crushers are apparently the new dynasty. They won the team championship last year. Remember, Bryson was like the happiest Bryson's ever been. And yeah, but you mentioned Anthony Kim. Obviously, we have to talk about him. His second start, and it got off to the same as the first start. He shot 76 in the first round. And we should mention this is a 6,700 yard course, but again, the winning score was 13 under. It's not like for three rounds. It's not like these guys were shooting 62s left and right, but he shoots 76 the first round, 72 the second round. So by far his best score. And then a 65 in the final round. I get it. He only finished 50th place out of 54. But I mean, CP, you're really excited about this round from Anthony Kim.
Very much so. Someone posed the question in a joking fashion, our friend Ryan Baroff, that who had the better Sunday, Anthony Kim or Scottie Scheffler? And I actually think there's a conversation to be had about it, because for Scottie, obviously the putter was plaguing him, but sort of business as usual, especially the way he won, as we watched on Sunday. Best player in the world. We knew that already. A couple putts just had to fall. So while it was another big win for him, two there now, very impressive. The Tiger-like comparisons are, I think, warranted right now. AK, I mean, 65, going low. He's still got the going low gene. That's big time stuff. So I don't know. I'm wondering if AK might have been the winner of Sunday.
I think there's a decent point, CP. I mean, I was expecting like four or five events in. Okay, AK finally shows some life and like gets us excited again. But I mean, 65. I'd realize it's, you know, in front of like 10 people on a, you know, a golf course that we basically play at 6,700 yards. But, you know, I think he had like the second or third best round of the day with this impressive field. Yeah, I think that might be more impressive than Scheffler. I'm impressed, yeah, based off of the expectations. Like, you expect, yeah, Scheffler's 5-1 this week in the best field in golf. Like, we're not going to be surprised if he wins. He should win. The implied odds say he wins, you know, 24% right of the time or whatever. Like, Anthony Kim shooting a 65 in the final round is not supposed to happen. And it did in his second tournament back. Yep. It's only his sixth round competitively. That's impressive.
It's pretty amazing. I'm not going to go quite that far. It is amazing. I looked it up just now, Steve. I think he had the tied for the fifth or sixth best of the day. So again, really good round. But Scheffler, I mean, I think he had the best of the day, did he not? I mean, everyone marveled at that round because it was tough conditions. Mm-hmm. I think the average score was 73 point something. So he was seven shots better. So I think I'd still give him the edge, but I get what you guys are saying. Believe me, when I saw that people talking about him and that he made seven birdies, and when I saw he made seven birdies, I was like, oh, I bet he made, you know, seven bogeys though. No, he only made two bogeys. He shot the 65. I'm with you, Steve, in that I thought it would have taken a little longer for him to even flash anything like this. I mean, I saw our buddy Dan Rappaport did a video on this. He hasn't been fitted for golf clubs, right, Anthony Kim. Like, this is crazy. And even when you listen to his interview afterwards, I know a lot of people are focused on how he looks and everything else, but whatever. But he talked about something like, yeah, this is what I've been working on the last couple months, I think he said. I really think he's just been like practicing hard, if he's even practicing hard, for like a couple months, doesn't even have his clubs fitted. You know, I don't think he's really like gone all in on here yet, or at least to like an extent where we could really get a good gauge of how good he's going to be. If he really commits himself and, you know, gets fitted like every 18 handicapper does, he could be really good. I mean, 65 is no joke. I don't care what it is. So yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm very impressed. I think Scheffler's was like, other than him winning the Masters, probably the best performance maybe of his career. So I probably wouldn't put it above that, but no, this was really impressive by Kim. And I think there's reason to be excited. And again, I'm not going to, you know, the people, oh, we finished 50th place. Okay. I get it, but it's still signs of life from him. I was very impressed. So
very impressed. I hope he I hope he keeps it going. I think it would, that would only just confirm what we all talked about for the last 12 years, that
yeah,
this dude was uber talented and we got robbed of his prime. But if right. he comes back and I don't want to say wins, but who knows, you know, contends, like it would be, it would make 12 years of, you know, rumor mongering kind of all worth it for everybody.
It seems like he is taking it serious. He's playing that Asian yeah. tour event. You know,
yes. No, I hope, no. I didn't
I hope
mean
to that. See him yeah. do that more. No, your point is a good one, Myers. Like, right. You're right. I don't think he's like gotten himself in competitive shape.
Right.
Like, this was just an idea a couple months ago, probably.
Right.
But
right. You know, exactly.
To fully see the potential that's in well, there, I would hope that he keeps playing these random events.
Exactly.
That's why this. That's why I do really. I'm not even fucking around. Like, that's a crazy score to shoot. Like Steve just said, a couple months ago, this plan came together.
Yep, yep.
Obviously, he's probably been whacking it around for a little bit, but not in a competitive environment. To just throw up a 65 12 years later in a competitive environment, I really don't think you can say enough things about it. And I'm being dead serious. I know yeah. I have to like say that for some people out there.
It's, no, yeah, it's not no. as if he yeah. like hasn't been touching a golf club. Like, I was at Madison Club like 8 years ago and he was there on the range.
He was okay. Yeah,
he was there, you know, he's probably using these same clubs 8 years ago. But you know, it's not like he's completely removed himself from the game. So
he saw Steve swing and went back into hiding that day.
Maybe I'll give up on golf.
And the other guy, Cristobal Del Solar, saw Steve swing and copied him.
He was there that day too.
Yeah, he probably was. No, to Steve, right? Like I tried to clarify there. I think for the last 2 months, he's in.
Yeah.
And like you said, he's playing this week on the Asian Tours International Series Macau. I think I pronounced that right. Macau.
Macau.
But I think before that, like you said, he was touching clubs, he was playing, he was going out, whatever. But like, I think he's only been really giving it a serious go for a couple months. So I would like to see him do that for a couple years. You know, let's see, let's reevaluate when he's 40, if he's still playing these other events, if he's still doing some of these things. Again, if he gets fitted for golf clubs. So yeah, I mean, he definitely could get a lot better than this, but certainly an impressive day, at least for Anthony Kim. One more thing I think we do have to mention, because speaking of someone who we missed a bunch of his prime, or what we thought was going to be his prime, Mateo Manassero was a prodigy. And even when, I remember he burst onto the scene, people said, well, you know, he doesn't hit it that far, that could hurt him. Well, he turned pro and he won four times on the DP World Tour, then the Euro Tour, before he was 20 years old, or by the time he was 20. So I'm sorry, he obviously could hit it far enough. He then wins this past week. He had not won in 11 years. He had fallen off the map. He played on the Alps Tour, which is like the Hooters Tour of, you know, overseas. He made it back to the Challenge Tour, which is the, you know, the Euro Tour's version of the KFT Tour. He finally won there. And now he's back on the DP World Tour. I mean, to me, it's an amazing story to go 11 years without winning in any point of your career. But when you were a phenom and then you go 11 years to go from 20 to 31, I don't know, guys, that's pretty amazing to me. So shout out to Mateo yeah. Manassero. Again, I didn't catch any of it, but guys, I mean, you remember Steve. I mean, you,
yeah, yeah, that's when I was just starting it.
Right. Like I was going to say, it was probably right when you were starting. He was the hot thing.
Yeah. Jaime wrote like some big feature.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, the big deal was that he was in the bottom 20 of the right. tour in distance. So maybe that, you know, caught up to him. I don't mm-hmm. exactly know the depth of his struggles. And that'll be an interesting story once that story is told too. But yeah, great to see. I mean, how old is he now? He's like, what?
31. 31 or 30, yeah. Or is he only 30? Yeah,
the right, I mean, age of 31, just like
people say. People say it's when you peak as a human.
He's 30. He's turning. Dude. He's turning 31 next. Yeah.
Peak millennial age that came out this week. That a peak
is
millennial
it?
Is
really
32 and 33 year olds.
Oh, okay. Well, it's funny you mentioned ages, because I did want to mention something.
it was my birthday yesterday.
Hey.
And, it slipped through the cracks despite the fact, and I know it was a Sunday. I am the guy on my chains and on Slack who notifies everyone. It's the only reason why I'm on Facebook. I haven't gone on Facebook in years. I'm deleting my Facebook account today because I don't want to know when anyone's birthday is, and I'm not going to wish anyone a happy birthday again. I got stiffed. I'm done. So
you are the person in our Slack who always says happy birthday to other people.
Always. Thank you. It'll be like 7:30 in the morning. I'll see that stupid email from Facebook. Oh, so-and-so is having a birthday. And I'll be like, let me just be the first to wish them happy birthday on Slack. And
what'll that get you?
Yeah, nothing. CP hates birthdays.
I know.
I hate after 21. I'll give you the zeros, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s.
Right.
Children, happy birthday, children, until you're 21. But I can't do the you're turning 36 and I gotta wish you fucking happy birthday in the group chat. I do it, of course, because you can't even do it. But.
Exactly. And I will still be a guy who piles on late and says, oh yeah, happy birthday. I'm not gonna be the announcer anymore. I've done it for years, and this is the thanks I get. And you're right. You reminded me just this past week or recently, someone was wishing happy birthday to the kids of someone who I'm with, and I can't get a happy birthday. And again, like to your point, CP, I mean, that was ridiculous. Now, to your point, it was not a milestone birthday, you know, but I would have thought that maybe.
Yeah, usually everybody gets the main Slack.
Exactly. I would have thought that maybe Sam, I know he was up in Lake Placid because that's his second home for hockey, would have maybe said something. Nothing. He's got a 50th coming up. I'll be on for that because I'll be ripping him for being old. But again, I just would have thought someone. I know it's tough Sunday. I get it.
I've been off Facebook for a decade, so.
Good for you. I don't think I've, since my first daughter was born, which is almost 6 years ago, I don't think I've posted anything on Facebook in 6 years. Every time it's my birthday, I just go and I just like people saying happy birthday to me. I only stay on there again just to know when people's birthdays are. I'm going to delete it. I couldn't get off it on the mobile app. You have to do it like on the desktop. It's like a whole process. I'm done.
It's almost like they don't want you to get off of it.
They don't want you to get off
of it. And it's for all the old heads, so it figures you can't use your mobile to get it.
I couldn't do it. Couldn't get off the mobile. okay. So guys, anything else we need to talk about? Like Steve said before, we will have Keith Stewart on for a special episode doing the picks, because obviously the Players Championship is huge. We don't want to leave you guys in the lurch here by not giving you any picks. Of course, we will give you picks. And they won't just be go all in on Scottie Scheffler, I promise you. But anything else we should discuss before we wrap up here?
No, excited to be there. One of the best.
All right. Do you have anything? Around on Saturday? We heard rumors.
Maybe Saturday morning. A couple of Twitter.
The yards.
I think it is at the yards.
Really? You've already been there.
Yeah, I played there a bunch. It's a great spot.
Yards.
Who are we playing with, CP? Kirsch?
Bryce Sandel DeChambly is his name on Twitter.
I know you're talking about.
Luke Peacock. Is that another guy, I think? And Tweet Mitchell. Tweet Mitchell.
Tweet Mitchell.
So I think there's a couple options. One of them has a private club. Wouldn't say no to that. But I think for now we have a Yards. Tea time Saturday morning. So yeah, excited for that. But yeah, just excited for the players in general. It's always a fun. The weather looks good. It has not, that has not been the case since the move to March. There's good days and really bad days. 2 years ago, it was 30 degrees one morning, I remember. Finished on Monday, barely made my flight Monday night. That's where I sat next to Max Homa at Chili's that Monday night.
Oh, yeah.
It was a wild week. The year before that, maybe that was the week my wife came, like, you got to come to the Players. The weather's always amazing. And it was like the worst weather of all time every day.
You've gotten screwed.
So, but it looks like 70s and 80s sun every day. should be low. I would imagine the scoring will be low unless it gets really windy. If the weather's going to be super nice, so we'll probably have a, you know, not a birdie fest. Sawgrass always brings the noise a little bit, but you know, typical 17, 18 under week. We still got to play well. Got to golf your ball there. So excited to see some. I'm not all down on the field. Whatever.
Greatest field in golf.
Shut up, everybody! Jesus Christ. We got a full field. There's going to be some good action. I'm sure some of the stars will be at the top. There's going to be some guys you've never heard of who will be there. Everybody just shut the hell up. And
it's just clearly not the greatest field in golf.
No, it's not. It never was.
Well,
I think it was.
We said that about the PGA Championship too, and there you got slapping it around, shooting 82.
You do, but then you had like the 20 club pros at the PGA. So, the players was the best.
Yeah, like 99. Yeah,
there was 156 guys, right? And it was 99 to top 100. Yeah, I love that tournament. I used to go all the time. I was supposed to go in 2020, and I didn't at the last minute, which was lucky for me. CP was kind of hung out to dry there for a little bit. Although he did make it back. But also, I used to go when it was in May, and it was spectacular.
I got one May, I think. Webb's here.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, Webb just blitzed
out. Oh, he blew.
But it was brown and crispy and hot, and it was great. But the March has been good, besides that one, the two bad weather years. It's been so far so good, I think.
Yeah. Now, it should be a great week, as always. And again, we will talk a lot more about the picks with Keith Stewart on a bonus pod. Also, speaking of bonus pods, if you didn't check out our Full Swing pod, check it out. Because I know, you know, I was thinking, guys, it came out, obviously, the first day it was allowed to come out. But it came out, like, before people had watched. And so even my friends, my high school chain, they're like, oh, Full Swing's out. I'm like, oh, you got to listen to our pod, which I never do. But I really thought it was good.
Yeah.
And then one guy was like, well, should I watch it first? And I was like, yeah, you should watch it first. You know, I was like, and obviously this was like the morning it came out where we'd watched it, you know, a week or so before. So I'm like, yeah, maybe we should have.
Well, we had to beat other people too.
We have to beat other people. Right. Exactly. So yeah.
I feel like there are some sickos who like want to find out the spoilers. Like Katie's always like that. We watched one episode of a show and she's like Googling it to see what happened. She's like, I need to know what happened.
Michelle doesn't do that, but if we watch a show about someone like a historical figure, or just a show based on true life, she'll Google and I'll be like, wait till the show's over. Please. I'll go down a rabbit hole with you after it's over. But
yeah,
like, I do not want, I don't remember this. Like I want to, yeah. Anyway, so check that out as well. And again, thanks for listening. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Thanks to Greg Gottfried, our producer. Thanks to Steve Hennessy for throwing a little birthday love to me on the Slack chat while we're here. And of course, now everybody
belated. Yeah, now everyone's like, oh my God, we forgot.
Exactly. Anyway, thanks for all that.
I'm not saying it.
Well, it's too late. Yeah,
happy belated birthday, Mike.
There you go. In person.
That's about it. We will wrap up. Check out our bonus pod previewing the Players' Championship. See you next time. All right. Boom.
Dude, Saquon to the Eagles.
No.
I heard the Swift news and was like, fuck, that means.
What a dagger to the heart. Well, I had heard it might be Eagles or even like Cowboys, right? So.
Couldn't just go to the fucking Houston Texans. And
oh, that's such shit. A dagger.
They're rooting for him.
Yeah, exactly. He's harmless.
Yeah, I can't root against him.